G'day, welcome to the Friendly Geordies podcast, episode 102. I'm joined with Ali, which of course is not at all a special guest at this point.
Yes, but I think Miss Love should get the title of being the special guest because he is not here today. For the best... Okay, this excuse, hands down, is like clearly... I feel like we should put Miss Love into the same category as we put your dog Zeus in now.
What category is that?
A dog.
That's a category. Okay, so just not capable of human consciousness.
No, because I... Okay, so I come to the studio and I call Miss Love to find out where he is, if he wants to grab lunch before recording or not. And as soon as he picks up the phone, he's like, "Ali, mate, I've got to give you some information, man." I was like, "Wait, what happened?" Like, "Dude, I completely forgot. I'm in Katoomba right now."
Yes, and this is not like the bad old days when he lived about 20 minutes away from the studio if he just whacked on a shirt.
Yes.
still takes the man an unforeseeable amount of time to put on basic clothing items. But on top of that, there's also a 3-hour delay purely just by the tyranny of distance now.
Absolutely. If it was anyone else but Miss Love, I think he would have, like, we would have stopped asking him to come at this point. But because he falls into that dog category, like, as soon as he told me I forgot, like, I kind of had that aw moment in my head, like, aw, this guy. Of course he forgot. I didn't remind him.
You've got no one to blame but yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's like when Zeus takes his shit on the carpet. Like,
yeah. Well, I should have let him outside.
Yes, you should have let him. And like the first thing I was thinking was like, I should have fucking reminded him. Like, I was blaming myself.
Stupid Ali. Stupid. Yeah, no, that's it's not cosmically fair, but on a practical scale, more than fair.
Yes.
It's great. It shows that kind of insight that somebody like, say, Bill Clinton has, that I was just reading recently. Isn't this an amazing checkpoint that he has in his mind that he runs through every time he comes across somebody who he finds to be abrasive? He just asks, "When did this guy last eat? Is he sleepy?" And he's just like, 80% of the time, that solves my problem. Just going through that easy checklist.
Yeah, he probably has figured out the game 21 questions perfectly. Where he feels like the first two questions need to be, are you hungry? Because that probably...
Yeah, and if they say yes, are you a hungry, hungry hippo? And then he wins.
Yes, he also tells... If someone says they're hungry, then you can tell that they can easily get angry. So you could probably predict how the conversation is going to go anyways.
That's it. So I like how that's just a nice little extra tidbit to share onto people's just day-to-day ramblings with other people. But we're here to talk business, Ali, as we always are when Miss Love isn't here to hinder it. Really, this podcast could go 20 minutes if it wasn't for Miss Love, I reckon.
Yes, we'd get all the material out.
So the first one that we've got is, let's actually start with why Trump's being Trumped. I don't know what that means. Care to enlighten me? Because you wrote this call sheet. I was just looking at Facebook.
Yeah. I did write it because that's the first thing that came to my head. But I feel like I've always been against Trump, as most of you probably know, but I feel really bad for that guy. Cause you know, like, throughout the campaign, people said he's not experienced, and now it just shows, like, because he's falling, like, he's hitting his face again and again against the wall.
It's
sort of not well. For one, the healthcare bill, I don't know if you've been following that. So what?
You know, I haven't ever since I haven't had access to the internet, which is now... I live in Lithgow, by the way, for the next 4 months. And you know what? I don't think I'm coming back. I love it up there. But yeah, I've just got commercial television. And then you realize when you're watching commercial television, how did anybody ever make an informed decision? You couldn't.
Yeah, you can only make an informed decision about whether to put guacamole in your salad now after watching commercial radio.
And do you have that decision anyway? Because most of the time they try to pump Masterfoods guacamole. And as I remember from a Today Tonight expose from it, it had less than 1% avocado.
Yes, it never has anything. Who knows what the hell's in it? It maybe remains of I feel like Slaughterhouse is, I don't know why, and it's being sneaked into vegan packets.
Want that extra pulp.
Yeah.
The little gel between the hoof of the cow and the leg of it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Cartilage
imagine
fat.
Imagine if it's, Jesus. Is that a thing? Cartilage fat.
Yeah, I think that's what makes things really tasty.
Yeah. All right, after you get over the initial shock of those two words together,
yeah.
Undeniably delicious.
Yeah, because like if you've ever had ribs, then I think the delicious thing in it is cartilage fat. That's what you're having.
Yeah, that's your only options out of cartilage fat, ribs or marshmallows. Why has somebody put these things together before already? That should be... it will truly be the end times when America starts asking instead of, would you like fries with that? Would you like marshmallows with that?
Yes, like just stuff marshmallows inside the rib cage and you'll have a new meaning to caramelization altogether.
Oh my God. Man, if there is a God, please smite us at that point.
Yes, it's required. You can kill us. Doesn't matter. Just kill us. No matter how many people humanity has been able to save at
yeah,
that point.
Unsalvageable.
Just kill them.
Yes. We're a Windows 2000 computer.
And please don't send another Jesus that will die for us. Just kill all of us. No need to send like your kid that is annoying you to Earth just so that he could basically get an ass whooping
that you did not want
to do yourself. God basically did not want to whoop his kid's ass, so he decided to come up with
toughened
this.
Toughened him up.
Yeah. God's
took
a writer.
Him to military college.
Yeah. God's a writer, so he comes up with these elaborate ideas to fulfill these things. Okay, coming back to Trump. So what happened? So maybe like a brief. So Trump, as soon as he came into power, he wanted to fulfill some of his promises, which you guys may remember included replace and repeal Obamacare. And so he doesn't know anything about healthcare. That's why he always said, I've got a great plan. Not going to let you know what it is, but it's great. So when it came to crunch time, he essentially Paul Ryan came to him and said, I'll take care of this. We'll pump out a healthcare bill. And it's
pump
going.
Pump one out. Surely they would have had. Why are they pumping it out? They've
because,
had years to think of an alternative.
Well, again, so maybe we can like discuss what the issues with American healthcare system is to understand why nobody's being able to come out with any plan that's sustainable.
Oh, by all means, Charlie, continue.
Okay, so the problem with American healthcare system is, so America pays way more in healthcare than Australia per capita. And it also does not have universal health care. So that's sort of mind-boggling for most Western countries to understand how the hell does that happen? How do you pay more for less? And the simple reason is because the American system is so privatized, even hospitals are. So in Australia, if, let's say there's about 3,000 surgeries a year for knee replacement, when Australia will decide to buy those knee replacement packages or whatever they are, just the actual synthetic knee.
Packages.
Whatever, yeah. The
just,
government.
Just your local Kmart.
Yeah, just your. Well, in America. Well, so what Australia will do is the government will buy a fuckload of them for the whole country and individually supply them to hospitals.
Get them in bulk.
Yeah, get them in bulk. So it turns out to be a lot cheaper this way, because the more volume you give them, the cheaper your product's going to be. In America, you can't do this. So the government doesn't do any of this. So private hospitals end up buying it, and they buy it at exuberant rates. Which is so everything turns out to be very expensive. Which
why
is,
do they buy it at exuberant rates?
Because they can't buy it at the same volumes as the government could. So automatically, the price will be hiked. Which is why Bernie Sanders kept on pushing for the single payer healthcare system, which essentially allows the government to negotiate all these deals. And because the government has the whole population, they can get the best rates. America doesn't have this. And because of their freaking, I don't know, free market system or what they perceive to be as free market, they don't want to get it, which is why Obamacare was a fix. So what Obamacare essentially did was they essentially asked healthcare insurers that we've got a lot of people that don't currently have healthcare, we will give you 20 million people, which will obviously make you happy because you're getting a lot more clients, but you need to give them a lower rate. Because we're giving you so many people. Yeah,
we're giving you the population of Australia.
Yeah, we're giving you the population of Australia. Give us a deal. And they did come up with a deal, and also government would subsidize some of it. The problem with Obamacare was the people that didn't have health insurance also happened to be the sickest people in the country. So as soon as they went into that system, the premiums just rose because there were more people that were sick in the system than initially before. The way insurance companies work is that they assess your premiums on the risk. So if there's more sick people, then the risk would increase, hence the premium would also increase, which will affect even people that aren't so sick because it's a lump sum deal. This was the so obviously a lot of people in America had their monthly bills rise up because the premiums were just high because they were sick. And that essentially is something that Trump said that I will repeal and replace. Now, that's easier said than done. This was a fix that Obama had to...
It is very easily said.
Yeah, it's so easily said.
So
and,
great.
And because he couldn't do anything about it, he had to depend on Republicans who he, I guess, assumed would know how to do it. But
why couldn't he do anything about it? Because he has zero knowledge.
He has zero knowledge about healthcare.
Yeah, it's a big handicap.
Yeah, and he came like literally after the 60th day of his presidency saying, who knew healthcare could be that complicated? Everyone fucking knew that. But anyway, so what happened was that the Republican Party with Paul Ryan came up with another healthcare plan, which essentially what they did was that they would take away all of those sick people from the universal care, which will decrease premiums for people that are already healthy and obviously increase premiums a fuckload for people that are sick because he's just taking away the net that the government provided. And that was, as you can imagine, not very appealing for people that voted for Trump because they're the sickest of the lot. So
there's a lot of old people in that mix.
So long story cut,
Bill Maher once said, one match at a Tea Party rally, because there's so many oxygen tanks there, that goes Bill O'Reilly's entire audience.
pretty much. So essentially what would have happened with Trump's new plan, or Paul Ryan's new plan, was people that were already sick will have to pay more and actually will lose their insurance, which essentially means they'll have to get insurance again, which won't be subsidized, so it'll be more expensive for them. And people that were already healthy, which essentially means young people, would have had to pay much less than what they were because they weren't piggybacking sick people. But that didn't work for... So Trump essentially assumed that we're not going to depend on Democrats to pass this bill because they're not going to agree on anything that I say. But because he has no experience in politics, he treated this whole thing as a business deal and decided that he's going to basically pressurize all Republicans to accept it. And the Republicans couldn't do it because their own electorates just went berserk on them as soon as they found out that this is going to go down. So his bill was he was humiliated and
so
defeated.
This is actually yet another example of democracy in action.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I'm saying. So essentially when Trump came in and he was saying that Trump essentially found out with his healthcare debacle that a business is different from politics. So the way he approached it was that he came up with a business model. So he initially tried to sell his healthcare to Republicans saying that this is the best deal that you can think of, like a businessman would do. This is the best quality product and you'd be stupid to refuse it. When that did not work, because again, this isn't a business. It's not just profits. You have to deal with people and their individual concerns. So he essentially said it's a take it or leave it. Second step for a business deal maker to do. Take it or leave it. So you either take this bill or you're not going to get anything that will reform your healthcare system. When that didn't work out, he essentially just sort of threatened them saying that you will face you will be in a lot of trouble if you do not accept this healthcare bill. These are perfect three steps for any businessman to do. And if he was in business, it may have actually succeeded. But unlike business, those people that are supposed to vote yes or no aren't doing it at an individual capacity for profits. They're doing it for people. So hence, business is a little different from politics. Eventually, he's humiliated. So he had to take back his own healthcare bill, and not because of Democrats, but because of Republicans.
What happens from here?
I don't think that they're gonna again.
Trump doesn't know that
because no. What? That's what I was. That's why I'm telling you that the healthcare system in America will not be solved with these easy fixes. Obamacare is like the biggest example, where Obama tried to come up with an easy fix. It was way more intelligent than what the Republicans were coming out. But again, the problem exists that the premiums kept on rising. So the problem isn't less government. The problem is that the government has to take care of all of it. And this shouldn't be too alien to us Australians because our government fucking does that.
Mm.
And they do a really good job at it.
They sure do.
Yeah, even though healthcare is expensive everywhere. But so to put things into perspective, America pays about 16% of their GDP, some ridiculous amount.
17.
Yeah, 16, 17% on their healthcare for 300 million people. And we spend about 7?
Mm.
Australia spends about 7%, and we have universal healthcare. So the problem isn't that nobody's coming up with a smart idea to fix the problem. It needs to be fixed in a certain way, which requires a lot more political capital.
Than what Trump has. I don't know how you can have more political capital than what Donald Trump has.
Well, because he is boxed into an ideology of free market that Republicans were propagating, which is why Paul Ryan came up with this stupid plan, because he actually believes in the... So when he talks about... When he's saying that sick people will be taken off of the... Then healthier people will have to pay less premium. He's only doing that because he feels that that's the best way free market will work. So if you pay for what you get. And it's an ideological perspective. But, you know, what about the people that won't be able to do it? And those people vote as well. And in fact, those people in fact vote Republican more often than not.
So that's probably the best people you could possibly piss off then.
Exactly.
People that just go, I hate you, but what are we going to do here?
Yeah.
I've been voting Republican all my life. I'm in my 70s now. It's a bit too far out to have a midlife crisis. I'm at the end of this shit. I'm just going to ride this out.
Exactly. And this is going to be a problem for not just America, for the rest of the world. As soon...
Why is that our problem?
Because baby boomers are getting older now, and that's where the chunk of the population was, which means that they will be the sick people that we will have to cater for, but the numbers have just increased.
Can't we just harvest them for their nutrients? As if that's not the most sane explanation. It should be a thing of how much did you achieve in your life?
Yeah.
How many Logies did you win? And if it's less than 2, you get pulped.
Oh man, baby,
that'd be great. I mean, that instantly excludes someone like Joe Bailey, who, man, I could not wait for him to turn into, what were we talking about again before? Fat cartilage.
Yes. Well,
any celebrity hairdresser needs to be pulped now.
Yeah. So
celebrity chefs. Stop getting praise for cooking things slightly better than the rest of the population. You write down all your recipes in a cookbook. We can do them now. You're idiots. You're completely useless at this point.
I feel half of the reason why people go to these fancy schmancy restaurants and really enjoy them is because they're always hungry when they go in there, and they only get like a little bit of food. And because their bodies require food really badly at that point, they just enjoy everything. And then they're sent home, like, half empty, and then they just go home and have, like, a stale pizza and say, man, that pizza that I had there was so much better than this.
Yes. So their job is 80% anticipation, 20% disappointment. As if we can't do without you.
Yeah. Maybe not all of them, but I bet...
But any old Chinese lady that's forking out sweet and sour pork for about $10 a serving, no, you've earned your keep.
Yes, you've earned your keep.
You just keep pumping out those 12 things that we Australians want, which is sweet and sour pork, lemon chicken, fried rice with a lot of ham in it that I suspect most of the time is Spam.
Yes.
You're safe.
Oh, sweet.
But anybody who's on My Kitchen Rules or something like that has gone, I'm going to get like pork, but I'm going to put some cornflakes on it. Well,
yes.
Or do that in the afterlife.
Or like some bogan saying that I'm going to make lamb brain and I'm going to deep fry it. Like, dude.
Are you talking about Huey?
I don't know. No, it was like some dude on MasterChef who was from like rural Australia and decided that this was going to be his main dish.
His signature dish is lamb's fry.
Yeah, and it was essentially just crumbed lamb brain that he deep fried.
You know the reason why we started multiculturalism in this country was purely to get away from that.
Yes. And the
stop trying to bring back something that like we've spent decades phasing out.
Also, how crazy is this that if you were living in like one of those Arab rich countries like Saudi Arabia or Kuwait, you can't buy lamb brain. Not because it's unethical, but because they think it's too unhealthy. So
why? What do you think's wrong with lamb brain?
I don't know. It's just like all organs are kind of not good for you. And a brain is like 100% fat. So like essentially just eating fat. So they just find excuses to make things illegal. But it was just funny that Australia was like talking about how we should deep fry crumb lamb brain. And Kuwait was saying, no, 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 that's too unhealthy. Go for a salad. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable, man. Unbelievable.
It is a very weird state of events when, one of those countries that it just reminds you of the planet where Luke Skywalker goes, anything to get off this junkyard planet. That those guys are beating you.
Yes.
Because you know for a fact that the Sultan of Kuwait is the splitting image of Jabba the Hutt. I would be surprised if he has legs. I'm pretty sure he just has a slimy tail.
Nobody knows. He never got up. Like, nobody's ever seen him stand up. The guy is always... And he's always wearing that garb, that little thing that you can't see his legs.
Yeah.
Like, he's never sitting in shorts.
There's clues. There's always, like, a trail of slime behind him. But there is other explanations for that. Maybe he has... because it's just, like, such a large robe. There is just one of those Nick Takes Over Your School tents underneath it. There's just a lot of sliming happening underneath there.
Yes.
But these are all theories. Nobody knows for a fact. We should probably move on to migration, since we're talking about semi-things to do with... Actually, no, we're not. We're just talking about the world and where does migration happen? Planet Earth. There you go. Fair enough.
No, well, I wanted to talk about migration. Well, I didn't want to. I hesitantly want to because, I don't know, I've just been watching like a lot of news, which I shouldn't because... Like, it's really messing with my head now.
Why?
I don't know, man. Like, everyone's just like... Okay, I was watching Q&A yesterday.
God. Can anybody write in and defend Q&A? Well, I was thinking about it the other day when... Because my mum was trying to defend ABC. We'll get into this later, but just as a little teaser for what's coming up next, which is essentially me shitting on the ABC. But, it was my mum going, Q&A, that informs a lot of people. It absolutely does the exact opposite. It is there. They have somebody of, like, the three or four stock standard viewpoints that there are to any opinion.
Yeah.
And then these people say their thing, and then half the audience is a Liberal supporter, and the other half is a Labour supporter, and they just clap their respected guy.
Yeah, and they
all...
I can
guarantee you, Q&A has never changed a single vote ever.
Yeah. They're almost...
Q&A should just be changed to, clap now. Like, it should just be, that just sign clap. Flashing.
Don't you think it's just, like, all of those audiences should just be CGI now?
Yes!
Just play a laugh track. Q&A,
stop hustling people in.
Yeah, Q&A does as much to form people's mind as the debate between Clinton and Trump did. I don't think anyone changed their mind. Like, people knew who they were voting for. Migration was a topic on Q&A, and I was just like, I was trying to give, maybe I wanted to like give a perspective of what migration was. So not necessarily of like how migration happens in Australia, but how migration affects the world that we live in. So if we go back all the way...
Are we going to ancient Egypt?
Yes. No, not ancient Egypt.
Damn it.
We're going even before that, when people could not...
There was no before, Ali. What are you? What are these people that doesn't believe in the Bible?
Yes, of course.
So it's exposed, eh? Not only you're a Marxist, you're also an atheist.
Because I believe...
Those people are never integrally linked, are they?
Yeah. Fuck the Bible. I believe in the Quran. No, okay, so this is when people actually didn't have the ability to communicate. This is how old we're talking about. So we're talking about ancient hunter-gatherer.
Well, before writing.
Exactly. Much before. So this is where Chomsky comes in a bit. So Chomsky, according to his thesis, who's basically the god of linguistics. So he's the guy that you need to listen to if you're talking about anything about language. So he says that humans develop the ability humans develop language not to communicate to others, but as an analysis tool for their own mind to understand how things work. So that's why you only think in a language. There's no other way of thinking about things. So you essentially formed language to analyze how things affect you on a day-to-day basis and make sense of what can be beneficial for you. So it's a very individualistic thing.
Is that so?
Yes.
Because I've heard apologists, I don't know what they are, but you know those zookeepers that just look at gorillas all day?
Yeah.
Chuck a piece of meat at them every now and then, just watch them beat each other up. Sounds like a really fun life. They were saying that the gorillas, the vast majority of their language isn't about plotting or trying to get dominance in the group. 90% of it is gossip. That's what their sign language is.
Well, look, there's a lot of debate on this topic. And Chomsky, I would admit that there's people that disagree with Chomsky, but I feel that I can trust that guy when it comes to this shit. Because he thinks...
Yeah, fair enough. Screw some zookeeper called Steve, whose greatest qualification that you can see is the fact that he owns a headset mic.
Yes. And it was one of the reasons why he argues this is also because he was like, if you take a hypothetical scenario of a person who's never spoken to anyone, has no idea of, like, if they've completely been isolated, and you take them into a setting of, let's say if you bring them to Australia and they go to public school here, they'll eventually develop the same sort of language skills that anyone over here has. So he was just saying that it's not evolution that changes language. It's actually the human mind has the ability to form it in a very quick span of time. So essentially, he was saying that communication is a byproduct. But the reason why I wanted to mention that is because that's the first step for migration. What communication essentially did was that it turbocharged our progress, because not only can we understand whatever's happening to us, but we can also understand what happened to others. So through others' experiences, we just understand life way better and we progress in a much better way. So essentially, from caveman time, essentially people telling others, don't go down that track because you'll die because there's a cliff over there or something. You just couldn't do that before.
I can see how that would be handy.
Yes. And also to share knowledge eventually. Anyways, so that was that communication, the ability to process an idea in your mind, communicate it to someone else that will be useful for them, will impact their lives in a great way. And migration comes into this. So if you look at the entire globe right now, the places that have had the most amount of migration, if you're talking about Egypt, let's go even before that, the Indus Valley Civilization, right? It's the most...
Of course you want to go there.
Well, it's older. Just
big noting your damn country.
It's the first civilization ever.
See, there we go. Another brag. Pretty
anyways,
disgraceful, really.
It's, well,
is this all just to say this at this point? Just to say one good thing about Pakistan on
okay,
this
so
podcast.
Indus Valley Civilization exists in modern-day Pakistan, but that is not the reason. It's open up any history book. You'll see Indus Valley Civilization as... Yep.
Any of those classic history books that you get from Scholastic that always have a Viking helmet on the front of it, and then it just goes, world history in 2,000 pages,
exactly.
One page for each year. The first one's always Indus Valley.
The big picture.
Yes.
So Indus Valley Civilization, it was insane. It's about 4,000 to 5,000 years ago. So before Moses, supposedly, I don't know. But this was an insane civilization. Like, they had a drainage system that would put 18th century Western Europe to shame. This is how insanely advanced they were for their time.
God.
And we don't know much about them because we still haven't, or historians still haven't been able to figure out their language because it's just too hard to decipher.
But it's too far back. But plumbers looked at that and thought, damn, why didn't we think of that?
Yes. And one of the things, one of the questions was that how the hell were they so advanced living in this, I guess, isolated civilization? But then they found currency from Babylon, so which means that they were into trading. What allowed this? What basically happens with trading, and which is an offset of migration, is that you communicate ideas from one place to another. So you get knowledge that you wouldn't have ever had by yourself, and that creates economic growth for the area, and it eventually leads to big civilization like the Indus Valley Civilization.
Like how Aboriginals in the top end of Western Australia had canoes and fishing nets because of the Indonesians.
Exactly. So they had people that were coming to them and telling them stories. So if you look at the map right now, all of the places that had the most amount of migration are actually the most cosmopolitan areas at the moment. So maybe, okay, so, you know, this is something that often you'd hear, like, people that have studied Middle Eastern history talk about, is that chemistry was basically invented by Muslim rulers in modern-day Spain. What they don't tell you...
What were they interested in that for?
That's what I'm saying. Well, because...
Gold?
No, not gold. Greedy. They were just like, they wanted to... Like, what was Socrates, what was Aristotle interested in?
I don't know anything about philosophy.
They were just like, they were people that wanted to think about shit. Essentially that. They weren't like just hungry for money. So they developed the whole idea of chemistry in Spain, but that's only because, why didn't they do it anywhere else? Why did they do it in Spain? Because Spain eventually became a hub for Christians, Jews, and Muslims to come together. And it had a very stable, peaceful period under the Muslim rulers. So they essentially delved into all of these ideas that they were individually coming upon, eventually creating a whole discipline called chemistry. Migration allowed for that to happen. And all the places that have had the most intense migrations have also had the most enterprising people that have basically created things for that area. People, the areas that have been isolated haven't been able to do that. Essentially, migration leads to society's progression. A modern day example would be, so if I tell you to name 10 companies that were created in the last 8 years in America, you could probably name, I bet you could name more than 10 because of Google, Facebook, everything that's technological has been so recent. Name me 10 new companies that were created in Japan in the last 10 years.
Man, but this isn't fair, though, because I know one pop star from Japan.
I don't know anything about that place. I can tell you that there aren't many. The companies that they have are huge, but they're very old. They're decades and decades old, like sometimes 100 years old.
Yeah, but that's because they have that Blade Runner-esque society where those corporations are their pyramids. They're their pharaohs.
Because everyone over there, this is something that brings us back, like when we discuss South Korea as well, everyone over there wants to join this massive, big company that already exists. People want to be managers for that.
It's the original pyramid scheme.
Exactly. Now, why is that? Why do they think of it only that way? Because...
Well, because they're offering $20,000 more startup salary than the other ones.
Yes, that's true. But sometimes you can make way more money than an extra $20,000, but you just got to be more creative. So
yeah, but, you know, Koreans and Japanese people, they're not known for
that. But that's what I'm saying, because they don't have anyone that's coming in with other areas of knowledge. So what happens is that if a migrant goes to another country, they don't know how shit works in that country. So they have to wing it, which essentially means that they have to figure out another way, and which will obviously be based on their previous ideas that they have already learned from wherever they came from, which means that they form an alternate path to success, which is what every economy needs. Because
yes.
The Bill Gates once said that I'll always give a very difficult task to a lazy person because he'll find the easiest way out. Because easiest way is also the most economical way. Nobody wants to spend a lot of money and a lot of time to do something that could be done for less money and less time.
So why are they going to China with all of these offshore moving of factories and stuff? Surely you should take that to Samoa. The laziest people. Instead of,
again,
I mean, Chinese probably the most hardworking people on the planet.
Yes, but why aren't they taking it to Samoa? Samoa is also one of those isolated communities that hasn't had the same amount of migration that, let's say, China has.
China doesn't have any migration.
Well, China has
who
had...
Who wants to live there you're like someone like me who has yellow fever?
Well, when I say migration, I just don't mean it in the modern sense of like someone goes there, gets citizenship, decides to stay there. What I mean is that interaction of ideas and people. Even China right now is desperately asking for people from Australia. So if you go to any university seminar, you'll get at least 3 pamphlets of like, have you considered doing an investment banking in China? Why do they give a shit about that? Dude, the last 10 years in Silicon Valley, about 60% of all of the shit that was created by migrants that weren't from there. Not people that were already living there, but from a different ethnicity. People that came over from a different country altogether and set that up. And Silicon Valley controls America.
Do you think it actually does control America?
Well, if it doesn't control America as yet, it eventually will. Yeah, I don't know. I just wanted to give this big picture. So what I'm trying to say...
And you have.
Yeah, what I'm trying to...
You've enlightened me in my little tiny petty views.
Yeah.
I really do see myself, even after living there in Lithgow for a month, as one of those guys that you'd see that's called something like Quicken Jim and sits on a rocking chair outside his house all day with a shotgun.
Yeah.
One tooth. That's my corn-eating tooth.
Yeah.
And you've opened up this old prospector's, this grisly old prospector's mind. Yeah,
and your name's Stiglitz. That's how you go about
it. Yes, I don't have a pet dog, I have a pet pig.
Yes, and that's the only way. But, you know, essentially that's what I'm trying to say is that something that has managed to keep Australia and most of the Western countries
afloat
and doing really well. Okay, so these are all the positives. I understand that there's some drawbacks to migration as well. Essentially, when people try to come in, what they do... Because when migrants come in, they let go of all of their existing structures of patronage in society, and they move to a different place, which essentially leads to economic progress, but also makes them focus on their identity. Because initially, when you find something that's very different to you, you face a little bit of resistance where you want to... be in touch with whatever you had previously going, which essentially means that cultures will be morphed. And that may create certain problems for people that are already living there.
Yeah, just really identifying with Tupac's music.
Yeah.
Creating ghettos.
And as bad as it sounds, in the grand scheme of things, that sort of stuff eventually just becomes irrelevant. 500 years ago, we didn't have countries like Australia and America. They didn't exist.
What did we have? Oh, the Holy Roman Empire.
No, we didn't have any Europeans living here. We had like a different country that were of indigenous communities. But 500 years ago, there were no European people on America or Australia.
Mm.
What I'm trying to say is that things changed so dramatically that in the next 500 years, this argument of like, these people are ruining my beach will become so insignificant that you'll actually laugh at it.
Wow.
Well,
that is a really long-winded... God, your brain is just a... If I looked at your brain on a scanner, it'd just be a map of China, wouldn't it?
Why would it be just a map
just
of
so
China?
Just so long-term. I never think 500 years in the future.
Yeah, because like, it's really hard to predict. But what I'm saying is that things won't stay the same as they are. So if you're trying to preserve something, just keep in mind that it's a losing battle. But look, maybe that's even more scary for people that were against migration at the moment. But
Ali Sebastian, you've already lost.
Yeah, I don't know. All I'm trying to say is that migration makes societies and places evolve. And if you don't want to do something right now that you may end up regretting in a few years when you realize that, God, there's something missing from our economy.
Mm, very true.
Yeah.
So your only options are to become New York or Tokyo. I'm still liking Tokyo.
Yeah, well...
It's not a bad alternative, is it?
No, it's not a bad alternative. You can decide to do it, but even Tokyo... Like, if you were living in Japan and...
Which I'd love to do.
Yeah, which you'd love to do, you'd realize that you're earning the same amount of money that your parents did.
Yeah, but that's happening here.
Yes,
so.
True.
We've got heaps of immigrants.
Exactly. Which is, again, this is something that is the reason why we have this anti-immigrant and anti-migration drive. Is because, actually, but that's not... Where's my money, right? So we've quadrupled profits. People don't realize this. Like, people think that business is doing well for most people. Most corporations and most companies are making more profits than they ever were. Every quarter they are doubling their profits, but our wages have increased in about 2% since the last 20 years. That's where your issue is. That's where stagflation comes from, and that's where you have all of these political monsters emerging. So that's where you actually want to look at it. And
who do you qualify as a political monster?
Well, I qualify someone as a political monster, essentially, who tries to give an easy answer to any complex solution, and you already know that this is not going to work. So, because they fall into the...
That's a very good definition.
Yeah, so people that can't actually do things that they are propagating because they eventually lead to doom, but it's very easy for the populace to understand. And because what happens is that once you get on that bandwagon, you keep trying to redeem yourself with more and more rhetoric. and less actions. And that eventually leads to a situation where you're basically fooling your population. That's what a political monster in my mind looks like. Some people argue that Bernie Sanders was also one of them. I do not agree because I think
We won't give that view any airtime. We'll just stick to the usual monsters of Pauline Hanson, Nigel Farage.
Yeah, Nigel Farage, whoever is basically trying to con you. Because say whatever you want about the liberals, at least they... I've seen a lot of liberal politicians, especially the moderate ones, and they try really hard not to lie and not to fall into this trap. They just sort of, they're just propagating an ideology that, in my opinion, is only going to lead to doom. But they're not political monsters. They actually give a shit about their electorate, like you can tell.
I do not agree in the slightest with that information, Ali. I think that's so far from the truth. You know, in fact, we'll just move straight on to media bias here because I'm supposed to be making a Holsworthy Live video about it because we're going to go into Patreon. And even though I said that I wasn't going to do that, guys, dig deep, give us money. Now, let's just talk about this because I didn't have time to. I wanted to put in 1,000 examples of media bias, mostly about the ABC, because what I noticed recently when going to my stand-up show across the nation, every time I make a slight jab at the ABC, even my audience, Gen Y lefties, go, ooh.
Ooh.
It's a bit harsh, isn't it?
Why?
Auntie?
Why are
you... probably don't even know that it's called auntie. I've probably just educated you on that just there. That is a very old phrase.
Yes.
Why do you feel that motherly connection to the ABC?
Why are you picking on an institution that's existed for several decades and is one of the most powerful media houses? Why are you picking on the little guy, Jordan?
Yeah.
That gets funded by the state. The state has basically said that we've got your back. And still people are like, oh, stop picking on the little guy.
Yeah.
Let's shit on Breitbart News instead.
You people make me sick. Thing is, though, here's what I've got like to say on this issue, right? First off, let's start with the most basic of it all, which is that every time I'm ever bringing up what the ABC does, basically to keep funding, and Ali just instantly put his finger on the pulse when we were talking about it at lunch, where he said that they are too shit scared to do anything. But the thing is, in terms of attacking the Liberal Party, because then they just get their funding cut.
Yeah.
That's not a good enough excuse. That's actually kind of really detrimental to society to have just something there that is propagating to be fair and balanced. Yeah. It is not at all fair and balanced. Now that I look into the camera, and I understand that like a few years ago I did a video about how the ABC isn't biased, and I stand by that. It isn't biased, but it's very easy to be non-biased when you're talking about a truck that fell over in Lismore. You know how they sit there and go, oh my god, fake news in Breitbart and stuff. Yeah, but Breitbart is at least attacking political issues.
Yeah.
Most of your coverage is about cyclones.
The only controversy when it comes to like liberals or labor, when it comes to that story of the truck, is was the truck a Holden or was it a Toyota? That's essentially the debate. Like,
why are you covering this up? Stop giving Ford a free pass. They're clearly the inferior car. It's only like half the population of Bathurst that is angry at the car for a story.
Yeah. If it's a Toyota, it's the car manufacturer's fault. If it's a Holden, it's the driver's fault. And if the driver's Asian, well, plus plus.
All the details. The devil's always in them. So, yeah, when I was discussing this with Mum, she was saying, in retorting, defense of the ABC, as every 40-year-old always does, it's taboo to make fun of the ABC to anybody who was like looks at Shania Twain and thought, like, what happened to music?
That's right.
Those people. It's the people that grew up with Sonny and Cher. Love it. So I was saying to her, as using as a challenge, I said, all right, how about we watch the 7:30 report tonight, and you pretend that you're Bill Shorten, and I'll pretend that I'm Malcolm Turnbull.
Yeah.
And we'll tick off every time we hear something that one of us would like. So every time they say a point of view that Malcolm Turnbull would be like, yep, that's my agenda, I'm really glad they said that, I'll put a mark down and reference what the mentioning of it was, right? At the end of it, she rang me up. In the 7:30 report, the supposed bastion of integrity journalism, two mentionings in the entire half an hour that was about that Bill Shorten would be like, yep, really glad that Lee brought that up. Fantastic. Me, Malcolm Turnbull, 20. There's 10 times as many pro-liberal talking points in the national broadcaster. These people have a clear set agenda, and that agenda is basically we're scared, don't fire us, on top of the fact that their current CEO is a old just lapdog for Rupert Murdoch that used to be on his board. She now runs the ABC and then starts putting it into the same thing that you see all the time, just SJW crap where they sit there all day saying, there's not enough women in media. It's a woman talking to you on television going, this is just outrageous. There's just no men. Like, all we've got is like Lee Sales, Sarah Ferguson, Emma Alberici. Like, pretty much every plum job there is a woman at this point. And they're sitting there saying that this is the big issue of the day while completely ignoring climate change. Reducing the penalty rates discussion. This is what the ABC brought it down to, which was penalty rates were cut for 700,000 people. They let Bill Shorten say that. And then they go, but then Malcolm Turnbull said that's actually Bill Shorten's fault. Okay, anyway, let's move on now. The fact that everybody's just lost like a quarter of their paycheck on the most important day of the week. Yeah, no, that's all fine because, look, I guess there's two sides of this argument, which is bullshit. This is the annoying thing about bias, right? A non-biased source is actually one of the worst sources there is. You'll see it in Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert's audience ratings when it comes back of how informed they are as opposed to the audiences of NPR, which is their version of ABC Radio National in the US.
Yeah.
They're twice as informed. Because if you sit there and give equal talking time to somebody who is clearly wrong as opposed to somebody who is right, most people, to the untrained eye, will sit there and go, well, I guess they both have good viewpoints.
Yeah, true. Man, and
what
also,
a load of shit.
And also, not only, in my opinion at least, not only is this unethical, but this is a horrible business model. Just judging by the way CNN has worked out. So what, I don't know if you remember this, initially CNN was basically paid out because they were essentially doing what ABC is doing now. They were trying to play on both sides and just trying to be as neutral as they can. Whereas MSNBC and Fox News were right-wing and left-wing
quote-unquote.
Yeah, I don't know. I hate putting MSNBC on the same... I don't think it's particularly left-wing. But anyway, so you get my point. So what happened was...
Democratic establishment.
Yeah, Democratic establishment. So essentially, CNN initially was paid out by both sides for being too neutral and not having an opinion and not having any balls. Eventually, after the Trump presidency, because Trump was anti-establishment and CNN, if it's anything, was establishment at that point, decided to start paying out Trump because they felt that this was okay because nobody really likes him. And eventually Trump won and CNN lost a lot of its credibility. And that's why, like, even Trump wouldn't allow them to...
It is the most hated news network.
It's the most hated news. And this is what eventually... You fell into this trap. Because what happens is that
you bought this on yourself, CNN.
If you try to maintain that neutrality, eventually a powerful leader will try to... You know, it's kind of like how Bill Burr says, McDonald's lost it as soon as they introduced a salad.
What's that got to do with this?
I'll tell you what it has to do with this.
Please do.
So when McDonald's... according to Bill Burr, as soon as McDonald's introduced the salad, they went on the back foot. They allowed fat people to blame them for whatever they had done. Mm. As soon as you try to maintain that you're neutral... You go on the back foot. So anyone can go on offensive and try to push you even further into your rabbit hole where you eventually succumb like CNN did and just like die. If you go on the offensive from day one and say, yeah, I know I'm not neutral. This is what my opinion is. You can take it or leave it or get the fuck out of here.
Everybody respects that.
Everybody respects that.
It's now the same with me. I honestly respect Murdoch Papers more than I respect the ABC. Now that I've seen the little games that they do and how they try and like keep up the image that they are neutral, when in reality, they're letting the Liberal Party with go after free pass after free pass. You just watch Lee Sales interview Bill Shorten and then watch her interview Malcolm Turnbull straight after that. And you tell me that that is a neutral source of information. But they still have this guise of like, oh, we're above it all. We're just here to give people information. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely not. And your information is terrible on top of that. It is dumbed down. Okay, let's just go through what they did on the 7:30 report. The first thing was a story about this mobster that was found by the Royal Commission into Union Corruption.
Mm-hmm.
And they discovered that as a result of that. So basically, first thing straight off the mark was the Royal Commission into Union Corruption was necessary because they found this one mobster. Absolute crap. I'll get onto that later. But just kind of defending the government's point of, well, that was a good use of your taxpayer money, this $45 million witch hunt against our political opponents. Yeah, that was for you guys. So obviously, if I was Malcolm Turnbull, I'd be like, tick, that's great. The next thing after that was Lee Sales interviewing all these crossbenchers saying, how about, so the Liberal Party is trying to introduce like it's get corporate tax cuts down from 30% to 25%. That was her position, right? And then the whole time she was there, she was just pressing them, going, well, the business council says you can't just cut taxes to small businesses, you have to do big businesses as well. So she was saying the Liberal Party's talking points to these people, right? And you're saying, well, yeah, maybe that's just creating like an argy-bargy or whatever. But the whole debate was framed not on should corporate tax cuts happen. It was, how much should it happen by?
Yeah.
And that's what Chomsky's always talking about in the quote-unquote left-wing media of the planet, that how much worse it is than right-wing media, because it gives off the illusion that there is this debate. But really what the left-wing does is set the parameters and distract you with bullshit, like, Karl Stefanovic said tranny today, oh my God, and they freak out about that.
Yeah.
Never pointing the fingers at the big guys. You know what I mean? Like, the fact that the ABC, Lee Sales was sitting there basically rattling off talking points of the Business Council of Australia, which is essentially the Liberal Party's version of the unions. That's their backer. That's where they get all of their talking points from, is the Business Council and the IPA. And she's sitting there rattling them off as the quote-unquote independent ref. Disgraceful. Then the next one after that. Basically all it was just her, one of her little lackeys there, just sitting there, you know, giving Nigel Farage tough question after tough question about Donald Trump, saying essentially that he's Britain's Pauline Hanson, how shit Brexit is. These are all points that Malcolm Turnbull would love to hear, right?
Yeah.
Every time Pauline Hanson gets bashed in the media, Malcolm Turnbull's sitting back going, thank God that's not me on the front covers of the papers today. It benefits him greatly to have Pauline Hanson become the boogeyman of society. And at the end of the day, let her say whatever the fuck she wants. She has four senators. You can't do anything with that. She's essentially Clive Palmer. She's a fat loudmouth. That's it.
And if they do that, she'll probably lose popularity.
Exactly. That's why. Like, any publicity is good publicity, right?
Yeah.
Instead of sitting there talking about, I mean, to sit there and say that Malcolm Turnbull is the moderate alternative to Pauline Hanson when he's the guy that just cut $50 billion from hospitals to give it to corporate tax cuts to banks and fossil fuel industries, to say that that guy is doing less damage to this society than some chick from a fish and chip shop going, we should ban Muslims. Say it till the cows come home. You can't do anything about it.
Yeah, and okay, dude.
And the fact that that was like a 1/3 of the 7:30 report was bashing on Pauline Hanson. If I was Malcolm Turnbull, I would love that, because she's also bleeding votes from the Liberal Party. And yeah. I'm not saying, like obviously I'm not saying Pauline Hanson's she's just a crackpot, but who cares? Makes politics more colourful. Go for the real enemy there, which is this pro-business, that is this pro-business, actually what is really, if you think about it, an extremist party, to defund hospitals and schools in favor of the most profitable companies on earth is an extreme point of view. And they're the ones that are basically telling the ABC, you give us good publicity or else we're cutting your funding. And then the ABC turns around and anybody that criticizes them, they go, oh, but it's too hard to do anything because basically I want to keep my mortgage. Fuck you. You're a fucking disgrace to journalism. you should be defunded.
That's it, man. And it's I completely agree with you. And this is one of the things that I guess I've been talking to you about as well, Jordan, before the pod, was the whole balkanization of media, which is that these ultra powerful monopolies are breaking into the smaller factions of media, has led a lot of these companies to try, a lot of these news outlets, the ones that do most of this, notice that they're always fiscally constrained. These are the media houses that are doing the worst in terms of money. Those are the ones that try to go, the reason why 1/3 or 2/3 of that program was just about Pauline Hanson was because the editorial team decided that that's what's going to get the most views.
Mm.
It essentially just boils down to this. So the media houses that are the most fiscally constrained will eventually make these decisions based on views rather than just ethical journalistic policies. And this is an issue of our generation, man. This is something that we would have to deal with. And with power, like stereo-charged information that is going all over the world based on these principles of editorial, it's a powder keg.
That's a question that I don't think anybody's to blame for, though.
No, I don't think anybody's to blame for, but
that's something that's truth of the media.
No, you should be able to blame media houses for that.
Why?
Because essentially, certain things, if doctors do, will probably be more profitable, but they can't do it because of the regulations and the ethics of that profession.
Mm.
Journalists should be put into the same category.
True.
So for example, if ABC wants to maintain a neutral facade, they don't have to do that by playing Big Brother on every editorial team off that channel, but just employ people that come from all different, have all different sorts of worldviews about life. So you can have someone that's sort of right-wing and also have someone that's left-wing, and you let them do whatever they want. That's how you maintain your neutrality. But you don't try
to,
like...
That's it, isn't it? You should have people on there that, instead of everybody saying on there, I'm not biased, which is crap.
Yeah.
Everybody on the planet is biased. Everybody has filters in their minds. I hate this thing when everyone points out to somebody and says, you're biased. That's not the right question. The question is, are you right or are you wrong? Everyone's biased.
Exactly.
That's ridiculous. Why are you even pretending that this is a thing? That's what's most infuriating about it, because it's like it's that classic thing that you look at on people, I don't know, when you see media personalities and the ones that are always doing really well, they're always just, well, because they're themselves. That's another thing that's annoying about the ABC as well. You can tell that there's just this total facade, and even more annoyingly, they're hiding the fact that really, I know that Malcolm Turnbull got a lot of heat in the press for accusing the ABC of being the elites of media, but they fucking are.
Yeah.
You go and look into the background of virtually everybody at the ABC, you'll find this over and over again. They sit there and preach diversity all day about how there should be more racism, more women on the ABC. I see a lot of that on the ABC. I see a lot of that on SBS, obviously, as well. That's not the issue. The issue is you're all women and people of race, and, like, obviously, you know, like the dreaded white male, they're all from private schools, meaning that their families are the elites of our society. And they're the ones that are, like, conversing. That's what, you know, like, while they're having their little Knox versus Kings game, they're sitting there going, oh, my son would love to be a reporter, Mr., you know, executive of Channel 10. And then he just goes like, oh, yeah, well, I don't know. He chucks a ball to the wing pretty well, so he'd probably be really good at sports tonight. Let's put him on that. Let's start him off on that. Who knows? Next Andrew Sally.
Just nepotism all over.
It is nepotism. Stop saying that there is, like, this problem in the media of racism and sexism. That is a boogeyman, and as actually my social media person put out recently, which I think is so true, you know what that came from? This whole, like, attacking the white man and this kind of thing that just exploded in the last few years. It was because the general population after the global financial crisis, remember what the boogeyman was back then? It's the 1%.
Mm.
The 1% is the one to blame for all of this. So they needed to shift it to something. And so they dumbed down the debate to just being like, well, not 50% women, so we're just going to have to make it all women. And making people focus on this, like, just dressing room shit. Like, who cares
if the host of the ABC is a male or a female. Are they giving you good information? Are they a good journalist?
Dude, it's essentially what...
And the answer is no. No. They're always just connected by family. Every single fucking time. It is just a station of nepotism draining your tax dollars off you. The best example that I can give is during the Royal Commission into Unions. It wasn't Rupert Murdoch that busted that open, saying that, oh, there's lots of allegations of corruption and criminal behaviour in the union movement. That was the ABC. They were the ones that broke that story. There was no evidence for it. There were some accusations from people in construction companies that when the Royal Commission came out, it actually turned out, oh, they're the ones that are actually in cahoots with bikies. But was that ever reported? No. It was just 6 months of headlines saying possible union corruption, possible union corruption, possible union corruption. And do you think the average person walking down the street is going to pay any attention at all to the possible part? They're just going to look at the union corruption part and think, I knew it. That's why I never pay my union fees. So obviously, like, union membership has declined after 6 months of hundreds of millions of dollars worth of bad press that the ABC instigated, basically so they could turn to Tony Abbott and go, see, we're good little doggies, we're on your side. So they threw the unions under the bus, these pieces of shit that have done nothing for you. At the end of the day, they've basically dumbed down the debate in this country that has made it much more difficult to get any, like, thing that's pro-population circulating throughout society. I mean, if there was a truly... if there was a news organization that was working in the interests of people, don't you think that we would have had a mining tax?
Yeah.
There would be no way that you would have, like, a debate between, like, a BHP bulletin person saying, no, it'll take away jobs, and just a normal economist saying, absolutely not, it'll create it'll create so many more jobs if we have that revenue that the state can spend on infrastructure.
Yeah.
Absolutely, but no, again, the ABC doesn't do that because they're a bunch of pussies that just want to keep their jobs, and that is all they give a fuck about. And then they attack the people that try and protect people's jobs, like the union movement. In that same time period that they were sitting there saying, oh, are the unions corrupt? I'm just asking questions, I'm not saying they are. Are they corrupt, though? You're framing it in a way that naturally leads people to think, oh, I knew they were corrupt to begin with. In that time, the China Free Trade Agreement came out. The Liberal Party tried to allow Australian jobs to be replaced with cheap Chinese workers for Chinese wages in Australia. God knows how many hundreds of thousands of jobs that would have destroyed in Australia.
Yeah.
And replaced it with cheap Chinese labour, right? Inevitably, it was the unions that stopped that. Did they get any press coverage at all? You can go Google it now. I looked at it. There was like 240 articles for it. How many union articles are there about union corruption? 240,000. You know what happened at the end of that Royal Commission? There was one person in the entire union movement. We're talking 50 organizations.
But it doesn't matter. All
one
the
fucking person.
It doesn't matter. All the biases were reinforced.
Exactly. That was the point. That is the whole fucking point. It was not to see whether or not they were corrupt. They knew from the Coal Commission in the 90s that came out that there was nobody corrupt. Oh, okay. So it's gone up a whopping 100% because now there's one person that was found to be corrupt in the entire union movement.
Instead of zero.
Still the least corrupt set of organizations in the country that just saved hundreds of thousands of jobs minimum, that got zero coverage for that and then just got all of that, like, negative exposure about that. You know how many articles came out about that? One. And it wasn't from the ABC. There was one article saying that at the end of that commission, there was one person found. That came out from The Australian. And obviously, when it came out from The Australian, they were like, yeah, but Moore should have gone to jail. You know?
Yeah, what else can you say at that point?
Don't you think? And that's the ABC in a nutshell to me.
Just
a bunch of niggling little fucking narcissists.
That are focusing on the
wrong shit. Just focusing on their fucking job and sucking up your money so that they can have this fucking job that they enjoy. Fuck you.
So you've,
I want my damn tax dollars back.
You've definitely burnt all bridges to work at ABC now.
I'm so glad, though. Yeah. So glad to have burned it. That was such an enjoyable feeling.
We should probably end this with, like, the fifth time that we mentioned Chomsky again. I don't know if you remember this, but Chomsky, remember when he was talking about the right wing and he was just saying, well, the problem with the right wing is that because they can't promote policies about taking your social services and taking your health care, they have to focus on these stupid ideas that nobody cares about. Like, they'll talk about gay marriage all day. I mean, come yes. on. And don't you reckon the left wing is now doing exactly the same
that
thing?
That is their whole modus operandi. You show me how many times the ABC or the SBS talks about climate change or your rights at work getting diminished by the day. They never discuss it. It's just a bunch of these smug private school fucks sitting there telling the rest of Australia, check your privilege, you know? Some yeah. fucking forklift operator in Maitland. Ooh, I'd love to trade jobs with that guy. You know what I mean? Like, that guy's a fucking definition of privilege, you know?
Yeah.
It, thou protesteth a little too much. Anybody who says the word privileged is always from Knox. Always. All right. That's the thing. All they do all day is sit there, and it's basically what they discuss. This is the left-wing media in Australia. They're Who magazine for politics. Just celebrity goss shit of, oh, Pauline Hanson said ban all Muslims. Oh, my God. Carl Stefanovic said tranny. We can't allow this to happen.
All right, this is probably where we should wrap up. Did want to mention that please check out Holesworthy Live, the YouTube channel, and also please leave comments on Podbean and iTunes and give us...
iTunes especially, and rate us there.
Yes. And
thank you to everybody who has so far.
And also, like, maybe you can give us some ideas that we can talk about, because... I don't know. It's good to stay connected to your audience, because we pretty much just had a rant today that we would have done normally. This is how we have lunch as well. But so.
Well, I guess Ali's just exposed a raw level of truth that I really wish hadn't. And I guess we'll see you next week.
See ya.